Document that will be guiding this meeting has been circulated, the agenda, so you have it in front of you. Thank you very much. Let's quickly look at it. And if there are any additions, please feel free to raise those additions so that you can add them. Any additions to the agenda? It says 9-minute briefing on to the members of the committee by the support staff on leadership report, budget analysis, budget cycle, role notification and support staff. Are you happy with everything or do you want to subtract a honorable week? You're happy. You are happy. Okay. Thank you very much. Yeah, it does look like we are all happy with the agenda. Shall we close our eyes and observe a moment of silence for prayer and meditation? Thank you. Right, we will then quickly zoom straight onto the legacy report. Who will be giving us the legacy report? Content advisor. I take it that you will then be listening carefully because this is the information that you will be of good use when you engage the department.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Nompha Omoliba. I'm the content advisor of the committee. My role today is to present the sector overview and the legacy report for our committee. We included, without the permission of the chairperson, the sector overview because we felt today is a very important day for honorable members because we are going to pass the budget. And some of them are still new to the sector, and you still don't understand the sector. So we felt it would be important that to give a picture of what the sector is about. The presentation outline is as follows: the introduction, and give the legal framework, the sector overview, the strategic objectives, achievements to date, key challenges, and the recommendations that were made by the committee in the 2010 budget review. In the introduction, just to mention that the Department of Higher Education and Training was established in 2009 as a result of the Presidential Proclamation No. 48 of 2009. The proclamation assigned the legislation previously administered by the Department of Education and Labor and required the Department of Higher Education to create a single and coherent post-school education and training system that is drives us to meet the aspiration of youth and adults of the country. If we can recall, for example, with the Sector Education and Training Authority, the FITAS were previously in the Department of Labor. So as a result of this split and the establishment of the new department, so there was a need to align the legislation in that regard. And the aim of this department is to develop and support higher education, vocational education sector, and promote access to higher education and vocational education and skills development opportunities that are provided by the CETA. In terms of the legislative framework, the department operates under this legislation. Firstly, is a constitution that guarantees the right of everyone to education. We also guided by the Higher Education Act, the National Student Financial Aid Scheme Act, Further Education and Training Act as amended, the National Qualifications Framework, Skills Development Act, and Skills Development Levy. The last two are more into regulating the Further Education and Training Authority part of the skills. And in regards to the aligning of the legislation as mandated by the Presidential Proclamation, part of the work of the committee, because we all know that one of the functions of the committee is in lawmaking, was to ensure that legislation is aligned, bringing bills from the Labor Department and the former Department of Education. The committee had to process the following bills. In 2010, the committee reviewed the Higher Education Laws Bill, which the explanation of it is in the legislative report. This is just a brief. And it reviewed the Skills Development Ladies Amendment Bill, 25 of 2010, and Higher Education and Training Laws Amendment Bill. And in 2011, again, the committee reviewed the Federal Education and Training Colleges Amendment Bill, which also repealed the Adult Education, because the Secretary of the Adult Education Act to regulate the Adult Education. So we repealed the Adult Education Act through the Federal Education and Training Colleges Amendment Bill. And we also committed to pursue the Higher Education Laws Amendment Act and the Skills Development Amendment, Amendment Bill in 2011.
So if you go to the first page of the...
The first page of our development report talks about the extensive of what is actually the purpose of the Belt Way. So in 2010, it was mainly the technical amendments because of the shift from the province to the national way. Sometimes we have to amend the HOG to the EG and to the Minister of Education. In terms of the sector overview, the chairperson mentioned last week that the work ahead of us is a monster. So our sector is huge compared to other sectors. If you look at this sector overview, at this drawing, you can see that the committee has to exercise oversight over 25 universities. And we're expecting another university next year, the Health and Science University. So we'll be having 26 universities left from 2015. So with different campuses and different types of universities. So we have the universities of technology, we have the comprehensive university, and the traditional university. So it's quite a challenging sector. And in addition to higher education universities, we also have the two national institutes for higher education in Mpumalanga and Northern Cape. This was established to coordinate higher education in Mpumalanga, previously because there were no educational institutions like universities in the two provinces. So, in terms of the Higher Education Act, the minister establishes two national institutes in both Mpumalanga and Northern Cape. They are still in existence. We don't know when the establishment will come. We did engage with the department last year, but they are still not sure when there was this establishment, because now they're two universities, so they are operating both in the provinces, meaning that in Northern Cape we have the National Institute and we also have Solomon University, as well as in Mpumalanga. We have Mpumalanga University of Mpumalanga, and we also have the National Institute. They are still in existence. And then when we go to the vocational side, we have the 50 SET colleges with more than 300 campuses across the country. And the department is planning to build more, 12 campuses, mostly in the rural area. So the work ahead of us is quite a lot. We also have public adult learning centers that are providing adult education and training. Over and above that, we have the 21 sector education and training authorities, the features. And we have read in the media challenges that when the Department of Higher Education took over the CTAS, you know, the legacy that they took for the Department of Labor of Mismanagement, Maladministration, Corruption. So some of those things we are still dealing with, but there's quite a lot of improvement, if I can assure members, but there's still quite a lot of work to do. And then we also have the National Student Financial Aid. We have the Policy Council for Trade and Occupation, which we call the QCTO, to regulate the trade and the occupation side of qualifications. And then we have the South African Qualifications Authority, Council for Higher Education, National Skills Fund, and National Skills Authority. You can see, members, that in terms of oversight, this is quite a lot. So I need also to acknowledge that we have not ventured much into adult education because there is still a concurrent function between the national and the provinces. So the process of the function shift is underway, but it's quite a lot of work to do. In 1 year, given the time that we have in Parliament, you won't be able to we tried as much as we can last year. We developed a strategy where we will call all the, we will go to a province and call all the refugee colleges to a central clinic and engage all of them, which gave us a good overview of what the structure is about. Because if you look at one refugee college, you may not understand that it's happening across the other refugee colleges. So, yeah, it's quite a lot of work. I'm not scaring new members, I'm just saying this is what the type of work that we are gonna deal with. Excuse me, members, I need to just save this on the stick so I just can have it to the internet. And these are the strategic objectives of the department: to improve access, success and quality in higher education and better education and training, to increase enrollment in science, engineering and health related programs, to increase enrollment, because let me talk a bit on this one. You know, in most universities the enrollment are higher in humanities and the arts. So the department needs to increase enrollment and at the end of the day also graduates in science, engineering and health related. But this does not mean that we are doing away with humanities, but we just need to balance. So that at least in terms of the kind of skills that are needed for the economy, we are balanced. And they also want to increase enrollment of previously disadvantaged groups, Africans, colors and women, into the course and higher education, to increase the number of university graduates, in particular in the skills area, and to increase the number of skilled youth by expanding their access to education and training, to improve linkages between the world of work and study. This has been a major problem, particularly in the University of Technology and FET, because the programs that are offered to the FET and the University of Technology, for students to complete your qualification, you also need experiential work, and it's very difficult for students to get access to the industry in over that to get that part of the qualification, the work-based learning. So that is the aim of the department, to improve linkages between the world of work and study. That is why in 2011 they did sign the accord, the skills accord with the industry, so that at least industry understand the importance, because institutions of higher learning and better education and training are not producing for themselves, they are producing for the industry. And if industry is not coming on board, at the end of the day, you blame the universities and the FET colleges that are not giving us what is relevant. But we should come on board, like in other countries, like Germany. So the industry is always thinking in terms of curriculum review. They know what is needed, you know, in the industry, and then they provide that. So that is why it's important to have industry, to have the labor in forum of education, so that we know what we are producing and what is desirable by the labor market and the industry. And to ensure that technical, vocational and training education and program curriculum is responsive to the demand of the labor market, as I've already indicated. And to ensure that academically deserving students access to higher education through funding from NSFAS. We know that there are many, many students who are academically deserving but come from poor families who cannot access education, but government through the National Student Financial Aid Scheme is ensuring that academically deserving and poor students do access higher education. So the achievements today, if we look at the increasing the enrollment, this is the picture, you know, this is the audited data from the Council for Higher Education, the OED data from 2006 to 2011. If you look at the applicant enrollment, in 2006 we have 151,106, and in 2011 we were sitting at 640,442. So there has been an increment, a good increment. And in terms of the colors as well, you see in 2006 we had 48,538. and now we are having 59.12. But the one factor as well is when you look at the Indian and white enrollment. With the Indians in 2006, we have 54,859. In 2011, we are still sitting at 54, lower than that in 2011. Something wrong is happening there. So we need to ask ourselves what is happening. Don't we have enough students? What is happening? And also, the white, we can see that in 2006, 184.67. Now we are getting 177. It's going down. So these are the questions that we have to ask ourselves and the department to say what is happening. Are they finding opportunities out there because of the internationalization or what is happening? And in this total, we should also count the international students because the South Africa has signed the study protocol. So to reserve 5% for each university for study students. And the study students are also paying the same fees, a bit like the home students. So we are seeing that there's a growth in higher education. And also I need to mention that in terms of women, we have grown. Female students are more than male students in the university. And as I said, that is the audited data until 2011. This data here, it's not the audited data, it's not going to be audited. And then you can see that in the technical and vocational education and training center, there's also been an increase from 90% from 345,566 in 2010 to 657,690 in 2012. This is because if we can recall, members, that the FET colleges were not an attractive institution, but the work that the department has done in terms of advocating the FET colleges and the importance of FET colleges in producing the intermediate skills, you know, that are needed for the industry. So there's been quite a lot of interest. But another side of the story is that the growth is because of students who cannot be accepted into universities. Because we don't have enough adequate space for all students that are coming out of the schooling system. So even the students who qualify for the university are going to FET colleges. Immediately the space is open for them to go to the university. They leave the FET colleges to the university. That is why sometimes the dropout at the FET colleges is a bit higher. Because the students are there, they're waiting for a better opportunity. Even students who have passed matric, they enroll in the NCD program, which is equivalent, you know? It's so sad in South Africa that we don't have enough space in higher education for all the students that are coming. And we are not saying every student should go to university. But it says if a student is willing to go to university but he cannot find a space. So a student who has a matric who has passed is going back to grade 10 because the NCD starts with grade 10. A student with matric goes and sits in a classroom with the same learner who has passed the 9 into grade 10 because they don't have space, adequate capacity in higher education. And here is the space is opening also in the FET college for the N6. They leave the NCV to the N6. That is why sometimes you find the dropout rate, high dropout rate in the NCV courses and also in the report 191 because they want to go to the university. Because the other challenge is the problem of articulation. When a student is passing an FET college, it's difficult for the resident student to be accepted at a university. University prefers students with matric. But if the ones who come with an NCV equivalent of matric, they are not readily accepted. You have to go through tests, they're subjected to lots and lots of tests. But without equivalent qualification, something is wrong there. So we also need to talk to the issue of articulation. And also, not every student can go to any university. University can partner with one FET college and only take students from that FET college and from that program, not every program. So you see, sometimes students feel, as much as I want to go to an FET college, I still need to improve my qualification because I don't want to end at a level of being a classmate. I want to improve my qualification. But there's still those students that members of parliament still need to engage and ensure that there's a smooth articulation to higher education for those. We are not saying every FET student should go to the university, because we will lose the craftsmen as well. We still want the craftsmen. But if they want to improve, they need to improve. But not leave the system. Improving is not that you improve, you become a manager and leave the system. As I said, 56% of the total Kenyan population in universities is female. So it's very encouraging that we are meeting the goals and we have exceeded even the target that was set. And in January this year, two universities were opened in Mpumalanga and Northern Cape. However, there's still low number of enrollment in those institutions. Like, for example, the program, we find that they are enrolling 20 students because they still don't have the physical capacity to take all the students. So we heard from the State of the Union address by the President that the construction will start in September this year. So meaning that next year, so we will see increase in terms of student enrollment and the new programs coming, because they can't start like taking everybody. They start with the programs that are less intensive in terms of the physical capacity as well, but which are necessary for the province. Education is necessary for the province as well, particularly the foundation phase. And also the plan to establish a new university of health sciences for the opening in 2015 are underway. So we are all looking forward to this new university, which will add to the work of the department in terms of oversight. As much as I've reported on the achievements, we still have challenges in the sector. When we did oversight the committee in the last parliament, every university that we went to, they indicated that we have a problem finding. There's inadequate funding in the system. So as a result, because universities are getting funding from three sources. They are getting funding from government, they are getting funding from the student fees, and they are also getting funding from the set three, fundraising and also through the research funding. So, but because government is funding only 40% to the university, so the university are finding themselves in a very difficult position, because also in terms of the economic climate. You know, if I'm a company and I want to cut down, so I will start by cutting down the bazaars, I will start by cutting down funding from other things that are not bringing me profit. So all the universities are feeling the pinch because they're no longer making, in terms of the platform, they're no longer able to get funded. So that is why most universities, to get the money, to compensate what? To complement what they are not getting from the department, the increasing student fees. Because there's stuff to pay, there's stuff to do. So, and as a result, there's always this collision. When the student fees increase, student buys. You know, and the universities, they want to offer it. So if you want to give quality education, you really need a sustainable kind of funding. And the department also acknowledged that they haven't been funding the university to the level that they're supposed to be funding the university. There was a review of the funding university held by our current deputy president, Ramaphosa. So they revealed some of those inadequacies in terms of funding. But we don't know how the department is taking forward the recommendations of that review. There's only one thing that I've seen in the current annual performance plan of the department, that they will establish a system where they are able to check the universities that are at risk. And there's also inadequate funding for research. You know, if we look at the system of our education, we have the strong universities, and then we have the universities that are very weak. You know, they're strong in research, they're strong in teaching, they're strong in internationalization. They're strong also in bringing in the mainstream. But there are those who are not able to make it, you know, in terms of the mainstream. So without government funding, those universities will close. So, I remember last year when we were in UCT, UCT said 80% of their research funding is coming from foreign donors. And you know, foreign donors also, in some cases, it comes with an agenda, it comes with a mind. You can't do as you wish. So, yeah. So, meaning that, honorable members, you need to take up this to say to this department, we need to increment in the research funding for universities. Because if we want to meet the targets that are set in the digital development plan, we really need funding for research. As much as we talk about adequate funding, there's also poor governance in universities. Maladministration and corruption in some of the universities. So we think that in the fourth parliament, there were almost 5 universities that were placed under administration as a result of this mismanagement. Meaning, even where there's money, if you do not manage that money well, and then you will fall into those kind of things. We have seen our universities lately, slightly, some of those universities now are out of administration. WUSU recently was also the administrator was like finalizing, and but we, as a department and as a committee, you really need to ensure that whatever the system that are set up by the administrators are carried over. Because in some cases, the administrator will set a system. After the administrator has left, the university goes back to where it used to be. So the department really needs to find a strategy, as it is proposing, that they will to devise a system where they will be able to quickly check if the university is at risk or not. But the other problem was the issue of institutional autonomy. You can't just come, you know, there's still those bans. Where in some cases other universities are using institutional autonomy for their own good, even if they're not doing the good thing. So I remember the teacher was telling us it's very difficult to go into the university because of institutional autonomy. They have their own councils, they have their own systems. So even when they do the wrong thing, they will still use the very same legislation to say hands off. So which is a bit difficult. But we are hoping that the system that they want to develop, the universities will take it with a good heart, knowing that it's about assisting and not about interfering, you know, those kind of things. Yeah, there are universities that are under administration in the previous parliament. CUT, University of Technology, CUT, University of Technology, and the University of Zululand and Walter Sisulu University. So these are the universities that were under administration. And again, one of the challenges is the shortage of student housing, teaching and learning facilities. So besides these two new universities, if we recall, since 1994, there's been a growth in student numbers, but we still have the same type of universities with the same infrastructure. So infrastructure was not growing and student numbers are growing. So as a result, there will always be challenges because most of universities are found in so-called urban areas where students have to move from rural areas into this area. There is no accommodation in the university. And where there is no accommodation in the university, students sometimes fall into this unscrupulous accommodation provider where they are not even able to study, you know. The department commissioned a study on student accommodation, and the findings of that study, you know, they're so heartbreaking to look at an environment in which students are really living under, you know, in the private, and also in other universities, because universities claim that they don't get money for maintenance, so the student accommodation are in bad condition. Fortunately, the government now is allocating some money, funding for student accommodation. We're hoping that universities will build proper student accommodation and continue to maintain it. Because we're going to take a lot of money to maintain the current accommodation that university has. Again, some institutions have a high student lecture ratio, which some lecturers are not even able to do their own research. Because when you're in an institution, you need to publish. You need to research. But because of the high student lecture ratio, they are not even able to do that. So which also compromise quality in terms of teaching of the students. Why in some institutions we're told that sometimes they have to stand aside while listening to the lecture. So it's not good, but this is what is happening. And another challenge is the low production of PhD students, owing to only 34% of academics with doctoral degrees. This is not the only reason why we are producing those students. You look at funding for postgraduate students. We don't have a lot of funding for postgraduate students in South Africa. It's only the National Research Fund, the NRF, that is funding. And the first question, when you compete, you submit your proposal. If your proposal does not meet the standard, then you don't get the funding. If unlike the NF Fund, when you are poor and academically deserving, you get the funding. But with NRF, it's not the same. So there's no formal system for funding for graduate students. And these are people who can be absorbed in the labor market. So you have to weigh the option, do I go to study and suffer, or do I go to work? And in some cases, these are the students who are coming from poor backgrounds. The whole family is relying on these students. Immediately when you complete your degree, you go and work. This is the situation. Some of us were in the same situation. So very difficult to go for postgraduate studies because your family is banking on you to go and work and do something. And also the issue of the PhD students, even in terms of the labor market, you find that they are regarded as highly qualified. In some cases, they complain that we are highly qualified, we can't even get jobs because the managers, they don't have the PhD. So you feel the incentive for me to do PhD is the one incentive for people to do PhD, and also the good scholarships for people to do PhD. Then most of the, particularly the students will take the PhD student. I remember as a committee we went to Porte, and we were told that, if my memory goes up, out of the 32 students that graduated, 20-something of them were from Zimbabwe. So as much as we were excited about the number of postgraduate students we had, how many are South Africans? So they come, they study, because their governments are paying for them to spend the 4 years at university. They come, study, and go home. So we pride ourselves that we are producing, but are we producing for ourselves? And I'm not saying, or remember, I'm not saying we shouldn't take international care. I'm saying we should, as a country, we should also up our game and ensure that what Zimbabwe is doing in supporting financially and even in the economic climate we are in, why are we not doing the same? Why can't we learn and ensure that we support our students? Because they will get good scholarships that make the students feel, I can stay in the university for 3 years. Because I still can have money for this, I can still have money for that. But if a scholarship is 6,000 per year, you are a student, you need to pay accommodation, you need to pay, please to be honest, it's not good scholarship. So we do have quite a lot of foreign students, not only African, from Thailand and other African countries. And when they think they are PhD, you know, we offer good education in South Africa. If you compare the whole of in terms of internalization, the whole of Africa, we are importing a lot. South Africa has a lot of the numbers are higher in terms of international students. So we are doing well in terms of Africa, but are we doing it for ourselves? Because when they finish, they go home, they go and home. And we need to produce the numbers of the PhDs that are required in the NGP. So it's something that needs to happen. We need to grow our own timber in our own country. And there's also an issue, a challenge around transformation. You know, the committee did oversight in 2009, and when we went to universities, you know, we met all the stakeholders. They all cry about transformation. So informally, what institution, the issue is white dominated senior management position. In black institutions, a black dominated male position, in senior positions. So transformation is also still an issue that in the committee we also need to pursue. Also transformation in terms of throughput is not about taking more black students, but we need to see them progressing within the system. So it's not about just pushing women into higher positions. We want women who are academically deserving into those positions. And we know that women have a lot to do. So when they go home, they still think that and that. They don't have an opportunity to start. You know, if they're given an opportunity, there is a wonderful program at Rhodes University for women, where they formed a society for women academics and women postgraduates, and then it's supported by the university. So during this time, they give women postgraduate students and women lecturers a retreat. They pay the retreat, they go out there for the whole week.
is freedom right? I research people now, is freedom right? General Artificial Supervisors are there to support the whole week. So for me, it's a good program that if it can be replicated, then the women will get an opportunity. Because during the course of the teaching, they don't have the opportunity. So, and it has increased quite a lot, but it has improved most of the women in Rhodes University. They now got their postgraduate, they now got their PhDs. So they replicated it at the University of Limpopo. It's also working well, because women are now able to have time to write their research articles, submit their publications, and women student postgraduate students also, they are able to have time to do their thesis, and they complete within the record time with a kind of support. You know, for me, it's a good thing. And I think the other challenge is the loss of recruit rate. As much as universities are taking quite a lot of students, but the recruit rate is still very low. So there are different causes of that. One of the causes that was mentioned is social factor. Sometimes it's a student that was pregnant at university and drops out. There's nothing that the university can do. And other students are not well prepared. When they go to the university, there's quite a lot of like first-year students. There are no approaching programs, you know, to take the students through university life. All of a sudden, you find yourself in the freedom, and you forget that you're here to study. You are enjoying yourself. And there's quite a lot of high failure rate, particularly the first-year students, because of the new environment. And also the issue of the NSFAS support. NSFAS as much as it ensures that students get access to university, it doesn't ensure that there's success. Because in some universities, there are more new students. You know, the funding that's allocated to the university doesn't cover the total cost of study. So, and most of the time, students compare what's happening at UCT and what is happening at University of Newcastle. Because at the University of Newcastle, there are more students who are needy than when you go to the University of Cape Town. Students of Cape Town, the student who goes to UCT, they are from wealthy families. You find that it's a small percent of students that are coming from needy families. And the university is able to give them a total cost of study. And the university also have their own in-house faculties because they are fundraising from outside. But in other universities, they do the top sliding because there are many students, they divide whatever the allocation they got with the number of students. And you find that the allocation that you get doesn't even cover the whole tuition fee. So you're coming from your family, there's no food. You can't pay accommodation because the cost of accommodation, maybe you are residing outside of the university, you can't pay them, they end up dropping out. There's quite a number of courses. I've also indicated that in most cases, the readiness as well, because university also complains about the products that they get from the schooling system, to say they're not ready for, there's still quite a lot of work to do that the universities need, you know. Go back to the basics. Instead of teaching what you're supposed to teach at a university, you go back to the basics, you provide foundation, a program, a supportive program to take them to a level that is acceptable for this region to perform. So, yeah. And the challenges regarding the technical and vocational education and training, more or less similar to higher education. We still have weak and strong colleges. And when I'm talking about strong colleges, mostly are the former white colleges, those are a bit strong, with a good linkages with the labor market. And we still have weak colleges. Sometimes this weakness is not on their own doing. You know, when we did oversight as a committee, we realized that equity colleges that are in the area where the industry are doing better. Because within their products, after they have produced, they go to industry. Like in mine, I remember the Orbit College in Rustenburg told us, when we sent our students to the mines for practical, the mines once coached them, even before they finish. You see that those colleges are doing well, they are being supported by the industry around. But imagine a college in a rural area, in a community where there's no industry at all, and you offer programs that need web-based learning. So the students will do that, they will complete the theory, there's nowhere to go for the web-based learning.
And also in terms of employment, because there is no industry at all. This is in the college, is in the village, there's no industry. But when you go to a college in Dipala, all the students, they go to mines, they go to a school, they go to, because there's an industry that is readily available to take the students. Yeah, those are the challenges that in some cases difficult to address. I also want to mention that there's still poor governance and maladministration and corruption in the FHG colleges. Because they were neglected for quite a long time while they were still in the provinces. So now the Department of Higher Education is dealing with those things. And we see a lot of improvement. There was quite a lot of colleges that were placed under administration. And then 6 out of 8 of the colleges in Eastern Cape were also placed under administration. So the concern, but there was only 1 or 2 left, others were already out of administration. So meaning that the department should oversee and exercise oversight over this FHG colleges to ensure that they take them to the level where they are supposed to be. And there's shortage of qualified lecturers in the FHG colleges. Most of the lecturers who are teaching there, they only have N6. And some are coming from the industry to the college, they don't have the teaching qualification. So you have the skill, but you don't know how to teach the skill because you don't have the teaching, the pedagogy you don't have. So it's always that, how do you balance? And when the colleges are contending, when we improve these people, then the industry comes again and takes them away from us because we can't pay like industry. So very difficult to balance. And the attrition, high attrition of science and engineering lecturers owing to unattractive salaries. Because lecturers are paid the same as basic education teachers. They are doing, they are doing more, but they are paid like just the same as one teacher. So they also wanted the department to look into the review of their salaries. And the curriculum review, as I've already indicated, that in some cases, grade 12 students are attending, doing the same course with a student who would learn our just past grade 9 because of lack of opportunities. And other point issues were low certification rate. There was a backlog from 2007. FHG college students passed, but they never received their certificate. The backlog was only dealt with last year. Imagine a student passed, you are sitting there, you don't have a certificate. From 2007. And some still did not get their certificate because the department was saying we're still waiting to clean the data. You know, you could imagine the student is now resenting, you don't even remember what you expect. So, and again, the issue of leakages of examination papers. Every ever cycle, there's a leakage of examination papers, which results in the delaying of the issuing of results because they will have to do the investigation. Sometimes it takes 2 to 3 weeks. While the department and Umal are still busy with the investigation. And when the results, because it's kind of a problem, you know, when the results are still pending. As a student, you don't know whether you go to the next class, you are progressing or what the college did, they will take the student to the next class. And when the results come, you fail. You missed 4 weeks of instruction of the previous class because you were in the next class. So they drop out because it's a morale, you know, as a person, you know, you were in another class. So it's sometimes a bit chaotic. And also it costs students because you lose instruction. Some they decide not to go to the next class, they are waiting. But you are losing 3 to 4 weeks of instruction while waiting for the result. And imagine the students who have enrolled for a semester course. When the results come, you've already lost and you are left with 2 weeks to have an examination, a trimester examination. So yeah, the committee was very hard on the department on this and I don't feel it's something that we need to take up as a committee because it's not good at all. And the slow progress regarding the migration of college employees because of the shift in the function. Now the FHG colleges are in higher education, there's a slow progress, you know. There are quite a lot of uncertainties among the lecturers saying, when are we going to when is this process going to finish? Are we taking all of us, because some of the employees are on council, they're employed by the council, while some are employed by the department. So there's quite a lot of uncertainties around those things. So, sorry, I'll be quick. And there's also both employee number not matched by funding, applying for a time and charges of accommodation. And the NSF National Student Financial Aid Scheme, which was established to overload and bundle scheme to address the challenge of students who are academically deserving but cannot have access to higher education. And the funds managed by the scheme had increased substantially from 4.1 million in 1999 to 8.2 million in 2013. But the 8.2 million, it doesn't mean the whole money goes to the students. It's also the administration of the scheme as well. So the number of student support has rose from 29,176 in 1999 to 383,114 and 194,504 at universities and 188,610 at SG colleges. However, there are also challenges within the scheme. Many deserving returning and first year students are unable to register due to insufficient ESFAS funding. The demand for financial assistance far outstretched the available funds. And the 2010 ESFAS review that was done indicated that ESFAS requires 3 times its current budget if students are to be funded at the full cost of study. And university reported a shortfall of 2.6 billion. We have seen honorable members in general the protest at all the universities because of shortfall in funding. So there's a shortfall in funding. And there's also acts of corruption by both students and financial aid officers. So students who are not even deserving are getting the salaries because they submit fraudulent documents, and universities and colleges are not making sure that they verify those documents. And there was also another incident at Northeast College where they took the NSFAS money and paid personal costs. So this year the department provided 1 billion to meet the shortfall of 2.5 billion, so which is still a shortfall. And the other issue, honorable members, which the previous committee could not find a way of dealing with it, is the misalignment of academic year and the financial year. Because this is now, that is when you are going to pass the budget, that the universities are going to get their money back. And what about the students? What are the university students generally? So this misalignment caused problems for the universities. Because the students, when they register, they want money back. But money will come after April. So it's a challenge because all students don't understand it. I've registered, but the university will register you because you qualify for the salary. But there's no money cash to the university. It's still a promissory note from NSF. But students have to eat. Students need accommodation, transport money. So that is why most of the time there's this collision between students and the college management. Because they don't understand. They want money. So I don't know how this will be done, where money, some percentage will go so that students can survive within that period. And lastly, honorable members, I'm just indicating these are the recommendations that were made by the committee last year in the budget review to the National Treasury. So this were recommendations because of another time can just browse and for NSFAS, we recommended 2.5 billion per year to address the current funding shortfall. And we also made recommendations over campus. We made recommendations for the university and the unbundling of the University of Limpopo. These were the recommendations which all the departments come. You need to find out from them whether there is good funding for the treasury regarding this. Thank you, Honorable Minister. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
from the presenter before we move on to the next presentation. Any clarification questions? Two, I see two hands. Okay. Madam and then Honorable Member at the back.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and our presenter. Thank you very much for the presentation, and it was more advanced, and I appreciate that. Let me start by saying I'm very much happy to hear that more female learners are now in the university. And then further ask the following questions. But I heard you talking about learners that cannot have admission in the universities and then that end up being in the APT colleges. And then my question is, what is the department doing about that? And then the second question is about learners that are underprivileged that can be able to pay the deposit upfront in the universities. What is the department doing about that? Because they end up not having the chance to go to the universities because of that. And then my third question is what I have observed in the Department of Education. We've got a lot of colleges that have been closed down. And when I check the educators that are remaining there in the schools, a lot of them are aging. And if they go for their pension, what is the plan to close the gap? Because now the College of Education has been closed up, most of them, and then only the universities, but there are few learners that are there studying for teaching professions. And I think these are the questions that I'm having right now.
Thanks, Chair. Honorable Chair, I just want to ask one question. I know the official will not be able to answer on behalf of the department, so I will just head straight to things that you speak to, which relates to the committee and the continuation of the work activities from one committee to the other. I would like to check with you if it is possible to recommend the same or add more on the recommendations made here to make it up for a financial year so that the department does not actually think that this was just one passing recommendation from the past committee, so that there's a much more of a realignment between the history of what the committee had, because if we don't do that, then the department might find the recommendations wanting if we don't echo them. That is one. So I want to check if are we required to endorse the recommendations as speedily as possible so that they are integrated into the medium term budget, or the department finds spirit in the recommendations again to pursue national treasure. Thank you.
In order to determine whether those colleges are used for educational purposes.
in terms of infrastructure, because we know that they were closed, but are they really used to their full capacity? That is certainly with regards to that. Thank you.
The fact that we are being briefed, given information, so that we are so informed by the time we sit and engage with the Department of Education. But it's fine, can you respond to those issues that you can respond, and some of the issues, if they are not able to respond to them, the department is supposed to respond to those issues. So for now, we're being empowered, so that by the time we set off with the department, we just, you know, yeah, all right. Over to you, madam.
Thank you, Honourable Members, for your question. I don't feel we need to engage the department on this. Yeah, in terms of admission to universities for disadvantaged students, what NSFAS has done was agreed with the universities that every qualifying student should not pay upfront payment. They are not paying the registration fee. So if you are a qualifying student, you are not NSFAS qualifying a beneficiary, so you are not paying an upfront fee. That was an agreement, and universities are determining that. However, there will be some who will say, at least pay, we will have heard of stories where students are required to pay family contribution of R1,000, you know, just to show, yeah, to make the university halfway. But there are also universities that will say they don't have operational funds, because remember, some of the universities are very big financial, so they don't have operational funds, and they force students to pay registration fee at the end of the day, so that they, while they're still waiting for the budget to be approved, they have something to be working on so that they don't use the overdraft. And you talk about the colleges closing down and the aging educator. The Department of Basic Education, the funding students who are interested in doing education. So through the Funzal Shaka, I'm not sure if you are aware of that. Through the Funzal Shaka, so they are supporting them. That all the universities are providing education programs. And there's also a former College of Education in Mpumalanga, the former division, has been reopened for teacher training. And also in the new universities, also in the Northern Cape, then one of the programs there is the teacher development program, the initial teacher education. So the minister also promised that they won't open or reopen on the college. The result is slowly where there's a need, because now they've also introduced the foundation phase in the university, foundation phase education program in the universities. Though not all the universities have already passed, but they want all the universities to train. Because universities were training for high school, but not concentrating on the foundation phase. Not that they introduced that. And Honorable Mbatha, it's out, but I just brought this recommendation to show members that this is what we recommended in relation to the increment in the budget of the department. So that the department, we through the national speaker, through the people of parliament, they submit this recommendation to Treasury. So Treasury has to respond whether they will fund this or not. So we are not sure whether they fund it. So when the department comes, you should remember as the department, how far are you with Treasury in regards to this recommendation that we made. So if not, because the appropriation bill has not yet been passed, so you need to make those recommendations, because when they pass the appropriation bill, maybe you can request those personnel that shift from there to where increment from there to, because this is your chance to do that. The budget were informed by the work that we did, also the engagement that we had with the department on, like, for example, when an entity comes, maybe South African, let me take SACWA for example, and SACWA will come and present their own budget and say, this is what we wish we could do if we were given this kind of a budget, but because we didn't get this budget, this is what we will do. We won't do this because we don't have. So we look at what is it that the entities will be able to do on the basis of what is given, and where are the shortfalls within the entities. And on the basis of that, like for example with the NSPAS, because there was a shortfall immediately in January last year. So that is why we recommended at the end of the year to say, to mitigate the shortfall, this is what, in discussion with the department, what is it, how much we want the department to deliver on this, and then the services, how much we want. But it's up to Parliament to recommend on our behalf to the National Treasury during that process.
Well, we are still new here, but I'm sure that these budgets are not overbooked, because to me they look very, very high, and we know that we work on limited resources.
We may say they are overbloated, but they are for medium term, because it's based in the medium term. If this could be given in the medium term, yeah, then it will be broken down, at least we'll be able to cover.
Thank you. Whip, are you okay? Okay. If we are all happy, let's then move to the next to the next item on the budget analysis. I think this is privileged information that will help us to engage in a meaningful, you know, debate or discussion with the Department of Education. And as we are all aware, today is not about the budget oversight. As long as we can then remain focused and not be all over budget oversight, we will be given an opportunity to deal with the other members. Thank you very much. And it is a necessary step towards the budget presentation to Parliament. And you must know that as they talk to us, also we might, not all of us, but we might be requested to debate on the same day when the budget is presented. So that's why I want all of us to listen carefully, take down those notes that we might need for a very good debate in the House. Over to you, Mr. Gomez. Mr. Gomez is our researcher. So he's definitely going to give us a good presentation like the previous presenter. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. I'm Ndumzi Gomre, the chair of the committee. I take it that you did receive all of you an analysis of the budget for the entire year. Which was sent to you in the last few days, I think. Which I think as you have gone through the budget itself, I assume that you have read it. And my point is going to be a short presentation, because it's also the budget itself, but it's very in the analysis that I've done already. Now, I want to tell from. It was later.
Okay,
proceed. Okay, thank you very much, Chair. I wanted to face my opposition with the following. It was the best of time. It was the worst of time. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the season of hope. It was the season of despair. Unquote. That was translated, I think it was 1889 the year, I think those were in this book called Seven Solitudes. Because the situation is, we know that it's an effect already from our government. And sometimes things tend to fall apart, but the community that you are in, you should be able to hold the center so that things can go according to plan. That's why we're here. And also, we want you to make sure that you. High function is meeting government, I mean the government to work in the straight and narrow, so to speak. And on top of that, therefore, finance is the key message. We know that we're talking finance today, and the finance then, you look at over the medium term, as our program was saying initially, but I want to talk about a few terms before I go to the budget itself, about a few concepts about budgeting. because the concept known as inflation in the budget and inflation basically it talks to how much a basket had last year of goods was worth like, and how much it was worth this year. That's what is called inflation.
If you look at the next slide, at bullet number three, if you look at the
service of the mother is, it grows there. The net one goes to be said. Now remember that Mahapa said here we're in the Nabal. Potentially from the Kupriya here up to last year. Now this year we want to do the same thing to increase the number going in there. But having said that, the issue is that the number increase, if you're going to increase the money, well, those will be commensurate with us. But if the numbers that the balance increases, that becomes a bigger challenge moving forward. Although it is good development. As a member, if you remember, last year, remember this year, unluckily, instead of the year of the then, and this year, the campaign might be the year of the then. It means now we need to have improved financial situation to the year of coming forward. Because we want to have those accidents, those craftsmen coming in from there. Therefore, the market is talking about also, if you say something, it must be sort of budgeted moving forward. So we must talk to that, basically. And then if you look at the last slide, which is my summary there, my summary just says that the humanitarian regulation spending received 2.9 billion rand, including the direct which is the NRF, the CTAS, and the National Assistance Fund. And the budget has increased in the last year by 2.8 billion. In general terms, by that, and then it tells you how much then you see in terms of the city and the research there. And then the last one, now we look at the number of students from last year to this year. That must increase from 975,710 to 991 in terms of the TV bed, and then from 650 from university to 800,000 to university. Now, if you know about the increase like that, then definitely the funding should increase also in terms of that, promotion in terms of that moving forward. Now, having said that, then, the budget then I will have to be talking then to the president of the government, and then also being to perform the way it's supposed to perform. And remember also that this year we have opened two universities, and there are next 9 years that will open next year. Now, what are the those things that we're doing there? If yes, then how then do we oversee moving forward? I think that my summary before we send you.
Well, I remember, there you are, it's just to see a like a briefing on the budget analysis by our researcher. I don't know if you got clarity to the questions. Remember, you can ask questions, but will be responded to by the department. Just clarity to the questions. So by the time we meet the department, pretend the minister, the deputy minister, okay. By the time we meet the department, we are so ready. Okay, is that my turn?
Now, I just want to ask the officials one question. You said there were increases that were expected as a result of what you would term the program or the perceived program of action of the department. And you said, if they say, for instance, this is the era stroke, the year of the accident, it means we should be able to follow that through the injection on the artisan training, FET, and so on. However, in principle, there is an allowable that the department is able to negotiate with the national treasurer, which means it cannot just throw its toys on the table. What is that allowable by departments on a year-to-year basis? So that you don't ask us here to be radical when things could not be accommodated.
Can I ask the department to respond when they come in? Please.
So in other words, that's a question that is relevant to the department. Remember, here we're just being briefed, empowered, so that the time we're here, we are able to engage in a meaningful way. Constructively and in a meaningful way in the department. Any other clarifying question? Well, we already passed this late. I think we should let the department come in now. Alright. If you look at your agenda this morning, we've got two other areas there. I think here you can read on your own. I think this work has been simplified for the members, but it should be important that members read. Familiarize yourself with the budget cycle
but also the role implementation of the support staff, because we do still need to know so that we don't cause role confusion in the committee for the smooth running of the committee. Honorable Vic, do you have anything to say before we, actually we're still waiting for the department officials to come in? Honorable Vic? Honorable Vic, do you have anything to say before the department comes in? You are happy, eh? Alright. And all other members, I'm sure you are happy and ready, am I right? Am I reading you correctly? Thank you very much. Honourable Minister, Honourable Deputy Minister, Honourable Members, and the officials, we I'm sure you're all here. We will now start with our meeting. But before we really get down to business, I would like us to stand up and observe a moment of silence for the two professors who passed on, Professor Russell Goldman, who is the rector of a vice chancellor of Stellenbosch University, and Professor Francois Zimmer from the Law Faculty University of Zurich. Shall we all rise? May their souls rest in peace. May we be seated. I take it that the agenda was circulated to everybody seated in this meeting. Am I correct? So you all have received the agenda in front of you? Yes, okay. Shall we then proceed? Well, Honourable Minister and Deputy Minister, Chief, Honourable Queen, and the Honourable Members and Staff Members, or officials present here, I'd like to take this opportunity and welcome all of you to this meeting. It is a meeting that we were really looking forward to, firstly, to meet with the Honourable Minister and the Deputy Minister and the officials of the department, officials that we'll be working with, so that we establish a working relationship with the council. But also, we are looking forward to meeting with you as this team that we are expected to work with in an amicable way as a team, but also making sure that we work as a collective and also work cooperatively together. So I have no doubt in my mind that I'm sharing the same sentiments with everybody sitting here, that as we will be encroaching into the future, working together, we will be working in, as a collective, but also we will cooperate with one another so that we are able to achieve what brings us together this morning. On our side, it's an oversight function over the department's budget. Yes, I have welcomed all of you, but I also want to extend a special word of welcome to the Honourable Minister and the Deputy Minister, the DG and the officials from the department. It is true that today we are about oversight over the department's budget, and as we are all aware, but as a reminder to those who are already aware, but to those who are new like myself, indeed this flows from the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. I'm talking about Section 55, 92, 114 and 113, which prescribes that Parliament maintains oversight over government to ensure that government is accountable. To me, this is a necessary exercise just before the presentation of the budget to Parliament, so that we all understand the strat plan, and we all understand the APP and how the budget has been linked with that APP, and then go into Parliament and present and also be able to debate in a constructive manner on these issues. So as we have conversed here this morning, we are looking forward to working together as a team. But what is key, and will be key as we move forward, is the understanding that all of us are charged with the daunting task of consolidating the gains we have made over the last 20 years as a nation. But also what I've got as key is our understanding that education is so key to the development of the country. Meaning that we will then have to be so united as we deal with education matters, and we will have to have a shared vision regardless of our different political affiliations. A shared vision that will enable the department indeed to take this country to new heights. Having said that, it is key towards the country's development. Of course, I must say that I am expecting that as we engage with one another, indeed we become constructive. Let's have constructive engagement that will take education forward. So I will now request the Honourable Minister to do to give us an overview of the department, and thereafter we will then expect the DG to give us a presentation on the structure of the department, but also on the APP of the department and the linkage of the budget to that APP. Indeed, we're looking forward to working very closely with the department, and I'll also invite the department to feel free to contact us where there is a need, but also if we can be allowed to contact the department where there is a need, so we can have that type of relationship, so that we are time and again clarified on those issues that would necessitate that we contact each other. I will now hand over to the Honourable Minister to take us through the overview of the department. Honourable members, I'm sure you're ready, listen carefully, and then so that we can engage constructively with the department.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Deputy Minister, Honourable members, and the officials. Of course, Chair, that's why I agree with you that we need to call each other. It mustn't be like the old man before he departed and he said, don't call me, I'll call you. Tina, we must call each other. We agree with that. Also, let me start by concurring with you as the Honourable Members in paying tribute and observing a moment of silence on the passing away of the two professors. Professor Hortman was actually leading a very important project of the transformation of the University of Stellenbosch. So it's a big loss to that community, but also it's a big loss to the entire education sector. Professor de Villiers was an interesting old man from the University of Zululand, because when I went there to start to do my first year in 1976, he was a lecturer already. He retired, but the university called him back for his retirement to actually come and rebuild the Lower Faculty at the University of Zululand. So he's one of those exemplary lecturers who actually never retired. He was still at the University of Zululand when he passed away, still teaching. So those are very important pioneers. Chair, allow me to start by congratulating all the members who have been elected to this fifth parliament, new and old, who are returning, and also congratulate you in particular for having been elected chairperson of the portfolio committee on higher education and training. We're really looking forward, as you say, to work with your office and of course with the portfolio committee as a whole. And also congratulate our Deputy Minister for having been reappointed to be Deputy Minister of Higher Education and Training. Let me also, Chair, understand that this has been cleared with your office. Say that how we see our participation today is that, I don't have this input, but we're going to stay for the input by the DG. And then maybe after that input, because we have requested, in fact, we were requested to leave much earlier, but we leave now at 12:45, if you could understand the two of us. But after the presentation by the DG, if there are any specific broader political questions, maybe we start with those. Before then, we could continue on details that the DG will be competently able to answer, if that's agreeable. So, we are very thankful for the opportunity given to the department to present its annual performance plan. I must say that when I was looking at members, I was initially concerned that it looks like everybody is new in this portfolio committee. But what makes me happy about that, Chairperson, after having initially been concerned, is that the higher education and training family is growing. Because one of the challenges we have in our country, we have got more experts, more political activists, politicians, researchers, lecturers in the area of basic education, and not enough in the post-school education training sector. So the fact that we are new is a plus, because it means our cadership is growing, more and more people who can actually grapple with this very important area in what we are trying to do. The vision shines in the NDP recognizes education and training as one of the pillars to South Africa's development needs. It leaves education and training as core in the elimination of poverty and the reduction of inequality and unemployment. The department has embraced the education and training commitments in the NDP, and its endeavors will always be directed at ensuring the realization of the government's vision for post-school education and training. If you allow me, Chair, also to say this, that this whole concept of post-school is new, actually, it's relatively new. Normally we've been talking about higher education. It's correct our department's name, higher education, but we regard our core mandate as responding to all the education and training needs of all those who have left school and are likely to go back to school, and all those who have left school even before finishing matric, and all those never went to school. So if the basic education system or a loop system, component of the education system, has 12 million learners. We have to deal with the rest. So it's 50 million or 51 million minus 12. That's our responsibility. That's how we define it. Now, the reason why we have chosen this concept is a very important one of post-school. It's because also, amongst other things, we want to respond to a number of key imperatives and challenges facing our country. First of all, we have about 3.3 million, according to the 2011 census, youth between the age of 15 and 24 who are not in education, not in employment, not in training. 3.3 million. That's your 15 to 24 year olds. And that's a crucial period because that's a transition. All of us went through that period. We know what it is, what it means. You either remain trapped in poverty or you make it. Often depending on whether you are able to get a better qualification or a job or training and so on. So it's very important that we've got a dedicated focus. If we're talking about breaking the back of his unemployment, that group is absolutely central to focus on. Of course, we're not only focusing on all of them, you say we focus on every other South African, including others. But the second thing that we are also responding to is that we have to change the mindset and the nature of post-school education and training in South Africa. At the moment, it's one route. Everybody must do an academic matric and go to university. If you don't make it, then your life comes to an end. We must change that. We must change that. We can't be so academically oriented. We can't just want to. No country does that. Even in most developed countries like Germany, only 30% or something like that actually go from school to university. 70% they get apprenticed. In all sorts of areas. That is very critical also, therefore, in expanding and diversifying the whole school education chain. We have to build a large vocational college system and other college offerings as well. Now, the annual performance plan that we present here today is the last of the period covered by the 2014 strategic plan, which we tabled in Parliament in 2010. However, it is consistent with the targets envisaged in the white paper. We are lucky in many ways because we are starting the term of this administration with a very good white paper, which was adopted by Parliament in November 2013, which we hope members will study and make it their viable. So, it depicts the trajectory that we are going to take in the medium to long term. On university education, just to say a few things, Chair, they are just certain it's in clear. What's in the appetite before the DG comes with the details. South Africa now, we are very proud, has 26 public universities, no longer 23. This consists of what we call 11 general academic universities, like your Rhodes University, your traditional universities, if you like. And then we've got 6 universities of technology. Those were your former technicals. And then we've got 9 comprehensive universities. You have to get used to the language. General, traditional, University of Technology and Comprehensive. Comprehensive, they do both the traditional academic as well as components of University of Technology, like University of Johannesburg. Which one? Nelson Mandela Anthropology. They provide both your traditional programs as well as your University of Technology. Those are 9. Now, during the 2013-14 academic year, 2 new comprehensive universities were established. The University of Mpumalanga Province, Bombela, for now, its main campus, and Sol Plaatje University in the Northern Cape, with the main campus in Kimberley. A new comprehensive health and allied sciences university located in Karakua in Pretoria, the Sifako Mafako Health Sciences University, was promulgated as a jurisdiction in May 2014. We did this 2 weeks after the election. That's your university landscape. We'll go into detail, of course, as I've said, the DG, on what our plans. On technical and professional education and training, this year we expect to achieve 800,000 enrollments. Now, I must say this, or we could project that next year, 2015-2016, we're going to reach a million. Now, we're very proud of this, despite the many challenges that we face in the sector. Because when we took over, the ratio of university students to TFET, which is what we're going to call them now, we are abandoning the name FET, Technical and Vocational Education and Training Colleges. The ratio was about 3 university students per one. We want to invent that. By 2030, we have 3 or 4 TFET college students per one university student. Now, we're very challenged, which the DG and his team will touch upon, because we are faced with a quandary. The necessity to grow to absorb the young people who are sitting at home and they're coming out of the schooling system and still maintain quality. That's a role we'll have to travel together, because that's a huge, huge challenge. Also, we'll be introducing something new, which we call community colleges. Well, in our language at the moment, we call them community education and training colleges. Basically, what we are doing here, we are transforming and consolidating the adult education centers and grouping them into community colleges, and to broaden them beyond what they've been doing. Because these adult education centers have been mainly centered like a high school. You left school in standard 6, you went to standard 8 or whatever, you go there, which is very important. But we are saying, South African adults need more than just that. It's this academic orientation when we've been on. Adults need short skills. Banking, spending, to improve your life. So you can't just have centers that are only focusing on your academic that you want to do that. Yes, we must provide for that, but we must also provide for other things. The average growth, we have prioritized assistance, by the way, the year of the assistance was last year, not this year. But what we then did is that we declared the gentleman that is the leader in this. He's the commissar of the Artisan Program. That's the commissar of the Artisan Program. We've declared 2014 to 2024 Chesterton as the village of the Artisan. So we want to have a focused 10-year period. And the design is led by our deputy minister, not patronizing me, as a young man to also convince young people, as he would normally say, it's cool to be an artisan. We have got numbers that we will be provided with here. Let me not do that, Chairperson, here. But we are targeting to be producing 30,000 artisans per annum by 2030. We think that we would have, at the rate at which we are going, and of course subject to availability of resources, which is true, we can easily surpass that. We can easily surpass that. One of the key things that we would like, that we work with you together is, is the absorption of our graduates by industry from the TVET colleges and universities of technology, especially those who require web-based experience to complete their qualifications. When we took over CHEN in 2009, I asked the DG around 2011 DG that, can you please just get us the numbers of students who are at universities of technology, who are doing diplomas, who need workplace. Because what is happening, which is a huge leakage, has been a huge leakage in the system, that Diploma as an engineer, it's 2 years at university, and the third year you must do it in the workplace, then you graduate. And an engineer and a technician, we need them in thousands. But often, these youngsters who help us to park when we go to the supermarket or whatever, they are dropouts. They did the 2 years, but they didn't get the workplace. And that's it, it's the end of their lives. We said this was prioritized, we found it was about 5,000. That was a lot. Who did not have workplace. So engagement of industry, state-owned companies, and even government departments and municipalities is very crucial. Even those who do not need this for placement, we do for qualification. It would be good just to make it increase the number of learnerships and internships. Those who are finished. So that they get the first experience. We are doing a lot, we are making a lot of advances here. We, of course, going to be talking about this now in the context of the 2014 to 2019 medium-term strategic framework that government is finalizing together with a performance agreement that I will have with the President, all ministers. Led by the CGs, the department will soon be engaging in strategic planning sessions with an aim of producing a concise five-year strategic plan, which will be shared with the portfolio committee as soon as it is finalized. We endeavor, Chair, as I move towards conclusion, to direct our efforts toward creating an enabling environment for a differentiated but fully inclusive post-school system that allows all South Africans to access and succeed in relevant post-school education and training, in line with the electoral mandate of the new administration and our white paper that we launched at the beginning of this year. There are certain things which are very critical also in over and above the one that I've mentioned, if we are to create a viable post-school system, is that it must have high levels of articulation, which means transferability and recognition of competence. Unlike what we've been having, we have an ethics from an FET college in electrical engineering, but if you want to go to a university of technology to do a diploma in electrical engineering, you start from scratch as if you've done all engineering before. Let's break that. It's a waste of money, a waste of our youth time. Also, we are not going to expand only through contact institutions. That is why recently, was it last week, that I published a policy on distance education, distance and open. We are not going to expand where we want if we are only going to rely on building contact institutions. It's very expensive. Today, with technology, we've got lots of possibilities of expanding opportunities through distance and open education. Let me end by offering you this, Chairperson, that we would like, as soon as it's practically possible, negotiating with your office and talking to other members, maybe on a Friday when Parliament is in the city, that we can sit with the portfolio committee for the whole day. Ourselves, the DG and his team, and just take you through details of some of the work. Because I feel that 2 hour portfolio committee meetings or 3 hours, they don't do the trick. It's important. But if at least we can just ensure that we are all the same wavelength, so that when we then come to the portfolio committee, at least the details that you actually understand on what we are trying to do. And to get feedback, by the way, not just to tell you what we're doing, also to get feedback, including critical but constructive feedback on how we need to move forward. Led by the DG, the department therefore will present specific plans and targets in the medium-term expenditure framework, and especially the annual performance plan. I hope I'll discipline your time. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and honorable members.
Thank you so much, honorable minister. Can rest assured you have always been disciplined, so in this one, you've been disciplined with time. I will not open a discussion on the overview. If you've got maybe questions for clarity, let's keep them for after, you know, for during the discussion time after the presentation on the strapline and the APT. Is it okay with the honorable members? Agreed. Thank you very much. Shall we then move on to the next item, whereby the DG will give us a briefing on the strat plan and the annual performance plan for 2014/2015. Over to you, honorable members.
Thank you very much, Chair, Minister, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members. We really take this opportunity to present ourselves to you and my colleagues as well. I will try to be difficult, Chair.
Sorry, Chair. I don't know whether it's sort of interruption. I don't know whether it's proper that we have the team from the department introduced of our benefit. And we did not congratulate the minister for reappointment as well.
Okay, thank you very much. I've just been reminded of apparently there's been an oversight, but thank you so much. Remember, I'm working as a team, so thanks for assisting me there. Let me congratulate the Honourable Minister for the second appointment as the Minister of the Department of Higher Education and Training, but also let me equally congratulate the Deputy Minister for also his second appointment as the Deputy Minister of the Department of Higher Education and Training. I will then request the DG to introduce your team as requested by the Honourable Member. But I think after you have introduced your team, I will then also request that we introduce ourselves as members of this committee. The reason why I skipped the thought, there were time constraints, I quickly zoomed into the real business of the meeting, but it's fine. I'm sure we can still accommodate the introductions. So over to you, DG.
Thank you, sir, once more. My name is Kodimbo Ndakonde, I'm the Director General of the Department of Higher Education and Training.
Good morning, my name is Saiful Sensa, I'm the Office of the Director General.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Feroz Patel. I'm the head of the branch HIV Planning and Information.
My name is Jason James Perdue. I'm the CFO of the department.
My name is Chair, honourable members. I'm Malik Wazonga, Chief Director of the Coordination Skills Development Branch.
Morning, sir, members. I'm Sile Christopher Mosheshem Vago, Acting Deputy Director General Skills Development Branch, Department of Education and Training.
Good morning, members. I'm Mashudi Mabi Zela from the University Education Branch. I'm the Chief Director responsible for University Education Policy.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Inga Stalin. I'm University Academic Planning, the Chief Director.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Tegumo Sowo. I'm the Chief Director for Qualifications and Programs in the branch called Vocational and Continuing Education and Training, which includes both TVET courses and adult education centers.
Good morning, honourable members. Heather Magnus, working as Chief Director in the Vocational and Continuing Education Training branch.
Good morning, members. I'm Bongilan Mwadis, working in the Office of the Minister.
Morning, members. Normal the health name is Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Office of the Minister.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Regan Mkiba, Director for this plenary.
Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. I'm Lulama Mbobo. I'm the Deputy Director General responsible for corporate services in this present.
Morning, Chair and honourable members. I am Boyogoma Sage from the HR component of the department.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Manana Makanya, responsible for communication within the corporate services branch.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. My name is Mboisi Matigama, Chief Director in the National Skills Fund. Thank you.
Greetings, honourable members. My name is Sibusiso Milangini, in the Office of the Deputy Minister. Thank you.
explain the appointment. Thank you very much.
Good morning, honourable members. I'm Gina O'Mayne in the Office of the DG.
For this side, oh, okay, there's a team over there.
A very good morning to everyone. My name is Temba Mutato. I call this as part of the Select Committee of Education and Recreation and Social Committee. Thank you.
Good morning, members. My name is Pumulo Khomela. I'm the Parliamentary Officer in the Office of the Director General. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Babule Redingwa. I'm in the Office of the Minister.
Good morning, members of the department. My name is Oscar Pali. I'm the legal license officer for this committee and others. Thank you.
Good morning, members. My name is Shane Matara. I'm a Volkakana's assistant.
Thank you very much. We will now come to the honorable members. May we start from my extreme left.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Julie Keegan. I'm a member of this committee and a member of ANC. Thank you.
Mike Sitonga, member of this committee, and Tom Maka.
Good morning, honorable members and honorable minister and deputies. My name is Tom Maka. I represent the Economic Freedom Fighters.
is HRC Council, Human Resource Development Council of South Africa, which is chaired by the Deputy President of the country, but it's housed in the Department of Higher Education and Training under the leadership of the Minister. One of the critical challenges that was identified in the department is the question of provision of post-school education and training, which is inadequate in quantity, diversity, and in many, but not in all instances, in quantity. That's the context in which the Minister was presenting to us this morning. And to that effect, then, government developed 12 outcomes, of which one outcome we have responded before is outcome number 5, which is the skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path for the entire country. That is the background from which it has actually been crafted, and the Minister signed an agreement on this one with the President of the Republic of South Africa. Our vision in the department is of South Africa in which we have a differentiated and fully inclusive post-school system that allows all South Africans access and succeed in relevant post-school education and training in order to fulfill the economic and social goals of participation in an inclusive economy and society. Our emphasis is on access, but not just access, also success in the city. Because if you improve access and there is no success, the city gets blocked. And its capacity to absorb more is constrained. That's why the emphasis is on both access and ensure that the quality of teaching and learning is improved. To take success into higher levels in the system, which is a very huge job. Our mission basically is to develop capable, well-educated and skilled citizens that are able to compete in a sustainably diversified and knowledge-intensive international economy, which meets the developmental goals of our country. We are doing this mindful of the fact that unemployment at any given stage increases progressively as one goes down the educational scale. And for us to be able to ensure that we break the backbone of unemployment, high levels of poverty and inequality in the country, we have to ensure that the question of skilling and educating our nation is statistic. Any post-school qualification increases one's job prospects. That's why our emphasis on the question of education and training, with TVET colleagues, sector expanding quite substantially because government and the country have identified this sector as quite critical and a cornerstone of skill development and training in the country. Not just the academic route the Minister spoke about earlier on. So the department will undertake this mission by reducing the skill bottleneck, especially in priority and skill areas. A lot of interventions we can talk about at a certain stage in this area that we have to meet. The amount of resources and the facilities that are there. Improving low participation rates in the post-school system, correcting distortions in the shape, size, and distribution of access to post-school education and training, and most importantly, improving the quality and efficiency in the system, its subsystems, and institutions. These efficiencies include also the efficient and effective management of the resources that are there in, and also improving the quality of teaching and learning so that we are able to realize this objective. Now, there are about 7 goals that were developed in the department. Goal number 1 is to increase the number of skilled youth
by expanding access to education and training for our youth in the country. And strategic goal 2, to adequately capacitate individual institutions for effective provision or facilitation of learning. These are the points of delivery, and we have made it a point that those who are entrusted with the responsibility of teaching our children are doing so quite professionally, efficiently, and effectively, because that's where we will be able to make the difference. All said and done, including the resources that government is pumping into these institutions and colleges, and the responsibility there, and the accountability in the actual teaching and learning rests in the name with those who have been tasked with this responsibility through employment by government. I think it's something that we should not let slip our minds and our notices as a country, for us to be able to succeed in what we are trying to do. Three, also want to increase the number of students successfully entering the labor market upon completion of training. The minister talked about the notion of work-integrated learning, which is quite critical in ensuring that you develop an all-round student graduate who will be able to be ready to get into the labor market without any glitches, out of the experience and exposure during the time of his education and training, where some measure of the activities at the workplace have been learned by the students. Therefore, we expand research, development, and innovation capacity for economic growth and social development. There are a lot of activities and programs we are engaged in here together with the Department of Science and Technology. But when we are presenting, we'll get into some details, not on them. Five, a college curriculum that is responsive to the demand of the marketplace and can transform and adapt quickly and effectively to changing student needs, with a special emphasis on artisan training, not just as robots, but artisans who will be able to adapt on the changing economic landscape and the demands by communities around which these students are writing. So the curriculum should be able to respond to the social as well as economic needs of our communities, of our industry, and of our economic sector as a whole. Six, it's a credible institutional mechanism for skills planning to support an inclusive economic growth path. At the present moment, we have various pockets of skills, knowledge, which is not consolidated in any meaningful way, in such a way that it would aid to enable us as a country to plan better on the demand side as well as on the supply side of skills that are needed by the economy. A huge project currently, which is housed at Human Sciences Research Council, together with us as a department, with various other research units located at our universities in the country, to develop this mechanism so that as a country we respond quite meaningfully on what in actual fact is needed by the country and the economy. Goal number 7, which is the last one, highly effective, professional, and efficient administration informed by good corporate governance practices. We are looking at ensuring that the amount of money we are pumping into the city, we do get value, we get better returns. Now, the following slide will be speaking on certain programs, the next of which would be the financial information and budgetary programs, and I would request the CFO to take us through this one. No, quite quickly. Over to you.
Sorry, DG, if we all agree, I would like members to engage with your strategic overview.
so that we don't pump them with a lot of information and only to find that they're not able to, you know, to engage on everything at the end. If it's okay with you, I will not remember, okay? All right. Honourable members, you are now allowed time to interact with the presentation by the DG on this. Yes.
Maybe we could combine it with our input.
Okay.
The two.
Right.
The DG's overview now, so that we make sure that we don't go through the checks.
Thank you. Honourable Minister, let's combine the two overviews and then engage in a discussion. Honourable Professor?
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Minister, for suggesting that, because both presentations have been very interesting. Well, there are many problems in the higher education and training field, as you know, and as you're fully aware of it, as your white paper extremely interestingly addresses. But the one that worries me is that universities do seem to be underfunded, and they're very demoralized and a little crowded. And not only that, but the TVECs, or TREVETs, or whatever we call them, and the CEPAs are plagued with corruption and mismanagement. You've mentioned quality as an issue. Both presentations have mentioned quality as a very important issue that needs to be addressed. But I don't see any budgetary or strategic serious sort of input around the issue of quality. So I just wanted to ask how that would be addressed. The second thing is the consistency with the white paper is not evident in the way in which you directed your budget towards expansion before fixing these problems. And I noticed that in the green paper, fixing the problems was recommended as a pattern before expansion, dramatic expansion was to take place. And then my last point is differentiation between universities. This is, I understand your theory about differentiation within the sector as a whole, but differentiation between kinds of universities has been very weakly implemented over the past year. And I'm wondering whether the department is envisaging, and this again links to the financial question, envisaging changing the funding formula in order to stimulate a much more serious differentiation between universities. Thank you.
Okay, I recognize Professor Kubisa and Ms. I'm still learning the names of the people in my team. But not very long, I've been knowing their names by heart. Ms. Killian, and then I also recognize Mr. Kishonga, and Mr. Banda, and then the Queen. So then come in at the end.
Thanks, Chair. We just want to thank the Honourable Minister for a very good presentation, and also the Head of Department for a worrying factor, especially with the universities, is the issue of accommodation. I do know that from 2010, the department has been trying to make some strides in ensuring that there's enough accommodation, enough beds for students. I would love to know how far the department got with the document. The second issue is the issue of long queues during registration. That would imply when with universities to ensure that they prepare in advance. I'll make a classical example. You get into Devon, it's up there during registration time. You see a long queue from the center. It will go up to the NC offices. It's such a long distance. Honorable Minister. So, but the worrying factor, it's a worrying factor, you know, because it exposes students to a lot of dangers. And the third one, Honorable Chair, is the issue of, we are pleased that the department is trying by all means to have more and more teacher education committees, but we want to know how they are linked with universities, how they are accredited with universities, so that they offer tangible quality qualification. Thank you very much.
really appreciated that we have this interaction, and I would agree with the minister that we actually need to have much more interface with each other, because for the majority of us, this is a new sector. We share your concerns and we share your ideals of what we want to see in South Africa, and but how to achieve it with limited resources will be the challenge. And that is why I would just like to pose a few clarity-seeking questions. Chairperson, first of all, we understand that we're actually changing the post-metric, post-school system around. And I absolutely concur with the minister that if we see international successful economies, it's not all the universities that will present the skilled workforce. It is really the vocational centers. And that is why it's such an important battle to turn the whole system around to provide a skilled workforce. Now, just as far as that is concerned, we still have perceptions out there. Youngsters want to go through university education. And that is just the perception of quality and what to achieve the best. So how are we going to go about it? I know that the Deputy Minister is very good at promoting this, but we will certainly have to give him further support in making it more sexy or cool to go through the other things. But then, the current position is at the university sector, and Professor Zoli addressed that. They are backing, and none of these university institutions, it appears, can carry the shortfall better than others. But they are flooded. Students, and especially the fact that the financial year apparently does not, the government year, financial planning year, doesn't correspond to university. First semester enrollment, etc. How does the department intend to address that? Also, from what the documentation that we received, it appears that the department intends to have a system so that they can actually track down post-school young people and see to it that they are placed, you know, and see which of the courses really work for the work environment. Have you developed that? Are you in the process of developing that? And how do you intend to do that? And then the last matter was the question with regard to your strategic goals. I think I have maybe run ahead of myself. Chairperson, I don't want to delay the meeting. There is reference to a system which is largely going to be followed based on the German example of vocational training and your system. Could you perhaps elaborate on that a little further? Thank you. Maybe it would have come out in the rest of the presentation, and if so, then the minister can just indicate, or the DG. The next speaker.
Thanks, Chair. And thanks, Minister, and the DG. I have only one question. The question is, I'm wondering about what takes place in the mind of the educator. I don't understand why a doctor, for instance, who is supposed to teach us about preventing diseases and he dies of liver cirrhosis. But this has something to do with the education which we give our people. Maybe it's not enough. But I'm interested in what you said, Minister, about changing the mindset, because I think that is where the problem lies. But everybody knows about this. I think the most important thing is how do we get there? Because that is a critical. I'm trying to know about the educationist called Edward de Bono. Edward de Bono has come up with some solutions. I'm not sure if you can do research on him. May find something to help. And in fact, at the end, he suggested that you know, people must be taught how to think. And I'm thinking also that the school, either in Venezuela or Brazil, which he said maybe we should include a subject titled How to Think. Thank you, James.
And then next countries, Zambata. Zambata.
Sorry. Thank you very much. Melissa and Gigi, my first question, the first question, and then there will be a clarity, second question. The question is, what are the delays and what were the reasons for the delay of issuing of certificates in some FPTs? And then the second clarity seeking question, which you may also treat as a general question. Honorable Minister, in the interest of your document many years ago called Ready to Govern, which is a part of the writing in 92, don't you think, Honorable Minister, it's time? Don't you think, Honorable Minister, it's time to politically take a decision on the waiving of the registration fees for the interest of the poor parents, but also for the interest of the poor academic administrators who are always sitting between not knowing what is the political status of access in its formative stage of real access? Because access without containing political provisions such as waiving of fees as a general understanding is not access, because at the adjudication phase of the entrance door, there comes an academic with another decision, and that decision may disadvantage the young men and women. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member Kekan.
Sir, when the minister presented, it stimulates you on that, because you see for the first time we've got an answer to the problem of this country. The day we get all these problems right, I'm sure South Africa will be liberated in all kind of ways. To the old colonial cloud that is hovering over us, I'm sure we'll be able to move that. Now, the three categories, university, technical and vocational, community colleges, that the focus is going to be of our development. I want to start with the community college. When I built the house, the guy who put the plumber was an old man, all about 60, 65, who's been working as a plumber. He never went to school. He gained experience from his factory for all those years. He did the workmanship was perfect. Up to today, my plumbing is perfect. Now, what I want to know, at the community college, is it possible to teach in people's indigenous languages? Because that guy could see, could master his things, but he doesn't hardly say a word of English. And I'm sure Jenny is example is because their people are taught in their own mother tongue, so the issue of language is a first thing. The second thing for technical and vocational training, unlike the previous question, we say, we should be taught how to think. I think we've got too many things that we just need to have the one people who open history, because he's a carpenter. Today carpenters are taught not just how to repair furniture, but also to design and manufacture furniture. Coffins for burying people and all those things. So I just also want to find out, because technical and vocational, when I was in country work, they would say, no, we qualify including in tech engineers, but South African Council of Engineering doesn't want to take us, because they say we are substandard.
Now, I just want to know, because they did from their own black, South African black engineer intensive, whether we've managed to address those racial hangups, because otherwise, I think we're not speaking for the white. That is just.
Okay, before Mr. Conde responds, and the Honourable Minister responds, Mr. Conde, I would like to ask a question on the acting post of the DPG for Skills Program and the University Education. How long have these DPGs been acting, and what is being done to fill these posts? Thank you.
9.2 billion to be precise. It's a huge investment in electricity. Of course, we understand perhaps the demand may be a little bit more, but there is a lot of concerted effort by government in addressing these challenges in the institutions at an operational level, at program level, and there is huge progress in that. That's why the enrollment in the university sector has actually increased up to 9,972,000 this current year, but the figures are still going to be audited. It is a result, the growth is a result of expansion investment that is in there. I think that also talking here about the question of teachers, colleagues, members will recall that the Ministry of Education and Training in the previous administration launched a program of career guidance and advocacy for the entire country. And the main purpose of that is to actually address the country and society at large about the importance of technical, technological and academic skills that are obtained solely at the Tibet city. And that has changed and or is changing the perception of society quite greatly. Because by 2010, I think the enrollment at FET colleges was around 200 and some more thousand. But this current year is around 800,000. It's a huge jump. And it is a result of this concerted effort in trying to change the perception of society out there about the importance of technical and vocational education and training. And we really appeal to honorable members to actually come in handy and assist on this question, because it's quite critical. An engineer alone is not that much useful without the support of about 15 technicians. And these technicians are trained in Tibet, in the Tibet system. So these are some of the specific interventions that we are currently rolling out in the department. The delay in the issue was chiefly just brief. Was in the previous administration dealt with this matter. So what was happening here? There were backlogs in regard to the consolidating of results in NCD in the main. Because NCD is certified at every level. NCD level 2, NCD level 3, NCD level 4. Then what happened? If a student at NCD level 2 didn't get all the courses, you get to NCD level 3 and the withdraw some NCD level 4, you get that. Then you come back and you try to finish up. So dating back 2007, then what we found in the system was actually a lack of consolidation throughout in this process. That's the area that we were working on, and we worked on it and we have addressed it. Now, as we are moving forward, we don't have that problem anymore. When we identify, we make a point that we put intervention measures and correct the inaccuracies and deficiencies of the system. So it's a thing of the past, largely. I think other areas really will feature in the programs as they are going to be presented by the respective branches, you know, going forward. I think it's those issues.
Honourable Minister, I'm not sure whether Mr. Conde would like you to respond on the two vacant posts where they are at in DGG. Okay, so to the Honourable Minister, over to you.
No, thank you very much, Chief. I've responded to two questions that were posed by the Honourable Members. One on the role of the department in reducing the long queues ready to create awareness amongst young people, matriculants in particular, and not just matriculants, because apply now, we thought apply now cannot go, you know, or cannot the campaign itself cannot be advanced without emphasis on career guidance, on career development. So we then targeted your grade 10s, grade 12s, to say, look, you have to start planning your future by deciding on the kind of career pathways that you may want to pursue, so that indeed when you get to grade 12, you are able to make a decision, apply on time. So it ran successfully during the year 2012. We're able to get the message across to young people. And in 2013, indeed, the long queues were reduced. There were not reported stampedes, of course, related to late applications and so forth. But this, of course, Chair, is a precursor to the central application system that will be implementing in the very near future. So I think we have done well with this campaign, but of course there is indeed a need to share to elevate the campaign itself so that we get the message across to young people. Honorable Killian and one other member raised the issue of mindsets, and I think the DGS indeed touched on this. And we do appreciate, Honorable Killian, the support that you are committing, that you will be giving us in promoting programs that have been offered by our shared colleges. Because as I end, again, the increase in enrollments that our shared colleges, as I just put it, is as a result of the work and the strides that we have been making to try and promote this program offerings, promote us and development as a career of choice and all of that. But this should not be just a responsibility of the department, it should be a responsibility of all of us, honorable members, your parents, teachers, everybody. Because it's not only the students themselves or the learners who have to change their mindsets on this wrong notion that school education only means university education. Parents themselves have to change their mindset. Teachers who are obviously interfacing with the learners on a daily basis must equally come to appreciate that if we are to drive the country to greater heights and if we are to grow the economy in a speedy way, then we would have to take the route of technical and vocational education. So we must come up together collectively in trying to change these mindsets and trying to ensure that we turn our young people into correct streams of learning so that indeed their prospects of employment get improved. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Deputy Minister. Over to the Honourable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Maybe just to touch a little bit on this issue of changing the mindset. Part of changing the mindset will also be where increasing, for instance, TVET graduates get employed. That is why the key issue is to bring these colleges closer to employers. And that is why we are saying to the city has open offices, each and every TVET college must have a city office. We are at 40 out of 50 now. Because cities can play this role of doing this. I only said to tell us, by the way, that yes, that we have an internship or relationship, 75% of them get employed in that. So that is very important in changing the mindset. I just thought that I'm going to just ask the DPRP has addressed a lot of issues that Honorable one thing. As I said, maybe it's something that I, you are right, the group I was saying moves slowly in expanding Tibetan government and focus on the truth and quality before you take off. It's a tough one. We ended up saying what we have to do is to fix the aeroplane in the air. That's it way. We expand while addressing quality at the same time. Because we can't wait. Every year we are adding, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of, just those who finish matric, that are those dropouts. You know. So we need to expand the system, but indeed there are challenges. That's why we have a very comprehensive turnaround strategy, which so the DG is going to talk about. The issue of differentiation is on the court. But we have to be quite honest. This thing of differentiation is so important. And universities, we talk about it, we talk with these guys all the time. But at the same time, you get the sense that people are very comfortable where they are. They're in their comfort zone. You know? We need to shake that. And just cut them how we do it. We have a document that we'll share with you now, which has taken a long time to develop on differentiation amongst the institutions. Teacher colleges, Honorable Kumita, are already, by the way, teacher training is a responsibility of university. We get it from the other hand to say, you see, you took all of teacher training to universities. Now it's no longer the necessary. But they are linked to university. The teacher training sites that we are opening are linked. Like the first one which we opened in Siyabuswa Gumara is part of the new university. The colors of the university of Mpumalanga. So initially we were assisted by MJ to set that up. Honorable Killian, yes, you're correct. It's clear to us we have to expand rapidly with quality of course and all the challenges, TVET offerings. By the way, we're taking over agricultural colleges as well. At the AGT, so that's going to be your additional responsibility to oversee them. But there's enough of that at the same time. We still really need to raise black participation in university education, especially the production of professionals, particularly in skilled areas, accountants, engineers, and so on. But nevertheless, the trick is this articulation. That if you decide to go via the Tibet route, you must be able to proceed if you want to proceed. You can start as an accident and end up as an engineer. The system must allow this. In fact, often someone who is an accident stands a better chance of performing better at university when switching over to engineering. So that's what we've got to put in place. And I will give with Nepal to the advancing of funds, you know, misalignment with the academic year. I must say this, DG, even if you are going to cover it. You know, we are embarking on very interesting experiments that we'd like to share in your commitment to even visit. We have a partnership with three companies that have got operations in South Africa. We are piloting a dual system. And we have identified a few colleges. Just to be, because you can't import just mechanically a system that's 2 centuries old from Germany or Switzerland, you know. But they have actually offered, and it's also doing nice things to us, because also they're saying, revise your triple BE code so that they recognize that kind of partnership for credits. Which is very important. It would be something that may be very helpful that you know many, many responsibilities you have. You may want to. While Shoma is gone, I agree with my daughter's report, by the way. But if it's great, you can have it another time. You know, I still believe, Honorable Basha, that Marx was a much better thinker, and to understand Marx, promotes your thinking. You know that yourself as a product. But the issue he's raising is very important. We must teach people how to think. Although, of course, honorable Gekhan is important, we must also produce to us. But it's an important issue. Maybe, Engel, I would like to talk about our postgraduate and PhD programs that we are planning with the Department of Science and Technology. By the way, honorable Master, we have long done away with registration fee requirements for NSFAS beneficiaries. If you know any college or university that demands that, please tell us, because they are actually breaking the arrangement. Because if you are pointed to say, you are poor, you're going to get NSFAS, but come up with $5,000 first, we're long done away with that. So it's no longer a requirement in both colleges and universities. One day I hope we can talk about teaching of African languages in our universities to produce teachers for schools. It's very important. And also to develop these languages. The last thing, Chairperson, your question, all I want to say to you, I'm prepared that I don't want by the end of this year to have a visiting director. That's fine. I'm starting with university education soon to actually do interviews and appointments. And then that is my commitment. In some other instances, we have big problems. But there are other times. For instance, the GDG now for vocational and continuing education and training was the 6th person. Which was offered to them. So there are also other challenges, but that's a commitment, and please hold me to that. Because those are my appointments to cabinet, not the teacher's appointments. I hope that at least take us through some of the issues and hide that in our part. And then hoping that soon then you will at least excuse two of us chapters with due respect. I don't know, is this the time I'm told to wear enough office for the members? Not yet. Available. This is our career development services. I love apply now. I'll come and give you at least this copy, chapters, and then we'll supply the members, the other members later. Thank you.
Well, honourable members, the honourable minister and the deputy minister would like to be excused at 2:15. We left 5 minutes. Let me thank them for their adequate responses, but also request members who have follow-up questions to raise those questions. This is the moment before they leave. Any follow-up questions? I see the honourable Kekana hand is up. But I'll also ask after honourable member Kekan. Over to you. Professor Ken will be next, Professor, after honourable Kekan.
The question on things and doing what in the context of the thing that we're producing some kind of abstract academic matriculants and graduates who are basically as a BA and 10% of them. So we're actually saying the part that the department is facing that we should actually emphasize technical vocational learning in community colleges where you get so many people with skills that we can use in our township but they don't have qualification and it either could be brought on board and help in some accreditation that could actually formally operate. But that thing also that people are not absorbed by formal institutions that exist traditionally as South African kind of engineers. Whether we're breaking that kind of the wall, this is the question I was asking. But mainly on the issue of thinking, I was not referring to get skills, I was referring to all the people who graduate and ultimately can get employed because the, if you said your qualifications are not in line with the needs of the economy, And I see me do the other, do what people can do things. I mean, they challenge us to kitchen units. And they just for 5,000 years to pay because the kitchen unit is just so beautiful.
Thank you, Honorable Professor.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to find out how far the ministry or the cabinet is going with the issue of these bogus qualities that have been mushrooming. I know the minister has been very, very slow on that one, but one is hearing that there's still a proliferation of them around. Just want to know, I mean, how far campaign has gone to ensure that you tell them.
Thank you. The question from me, Honorable Minister, is indeed as addressed through the information that we were given. I saw that there were budget recommendations in 2013 that were made. Now, I'd like the Honorable Minister to respond on how far have they gone with the implementation of those recommendations. But also, the other question is, where are we speaking about increase of enrollment in the TDET. I would like to know if that increase is matched with funding, and if not, what do you think would be the best solution there? Thanks.
Chair, thanks. With your permission, the last one, maybe the DG would be able to provide a bit more detail than just off the cuff on my side. No, I agree with you. I don't think we disagree, you know. I was just saying I can see the point where Honorable Dishonga was trying to get to around what you were saying about figures. But then it's not in disagreement with what you were saying. Honorable Kuboni, of colleges, we arrest them, but the justice system doesn't lock them up. It's a challenge. We've decided we are going to have a much more detailed discussion with the police, but also we must also have a discussion with the NPA. But that's a short to medium term solution. Well, a short term solution. In the medium to long term, we had our own today studies and impression that we can actually to develop capacity to be able to better monitor and evaluate and close the loopholes. One thing, for instance, that continues to face us is that you still have too many centers of accreditation. Sometimes you arrest, only to find actually this college is accredited by some visa, someone, you know? So it's not really an illegal college. Others, as I'm saying, that's to illustrate to improve. Honorable Trillian starts a nursing college, and we accredit that, and when you enter the college, it's written there, big certificate, you know, accepted by whoever. But only to find that she then used that to also over other programs that she's not accredited to do. So it's a huge campaign that we need to take up also as we develop our own capacity and better information to prospective students, which should be part of career license in itself. We will come up with this as we develop measures, you know, to say how we are dealing with it. As I said, at the end of it all is to improve our own mechanisms. Because in the end, it's not a law and order matter. But I don't understand the message that they must continue with what they are doing. We will check them together with the police. In fact, we want to do a different kind of door-to-door with the former minister of police on that. By going door-to-door to arrest, to check if they are registered, you know, together with the police. We are still going to continue to do that. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, sir. in advertising this advocacy program, as the minister is saying, it's not really a matter of law and order. On the career guidance campaign, it also features quite prominently as to what the public identify and interact with the department on a continuous basis, or verify before applying or registering with any college. So it's also in our website as well. I think there in the booklet, there are conduct details. We do flyers as well and on rail. But in the main, one the public is aware how to identify a registered and accredited college. That would be a plus, rather than just chasing the wrong doers whilst there is demand, you know, for people to be there. Now, on the budget recommendations that were put forward after the engagement in relation to the progress, as well as where are the critical areas of shortfall, upon discussion in the previous administration, we then followed up the matter with the treasurer. So there are discussions that are currently taking place now between us as the DDT and the treasury in trying to find ways of resolving, you know, the matter. Understanding, of course, that the health is not expanding, you know, that much. But there are various ways in which we are responding to the shortfall areas that the chairperson is asking, you know, about. But there are those current discussions at the present moment, and you are very much optimistic that we will find a solution.
Thank you very much. I know that the Honourable Minister and the Deputy Minister are ready to go, but before you go, Honourable Minister, I do want to say that take note of your call for the whole day's workshop, where we will be workshopped on your 5-year strat plan, APT budget, and the public entities. So I think the Secretary will make arrangements and will liaise with your office so that at least you know. The date that we set is also suitable for the Honourable Minister and the Deputy Minister. But also on your call on the on your call where you said we need to make the white paper our Bible, we also take note of that, and indeed we've also spoken about studying the white paper so that we can use it effectively and efficiently as an instrument to measure your performance on its implementation. We thank you very much, and where you spoke about absorption of graduates from TVETs, I think we also take note of that, and we will look at where we can influence and use our influence so that it is an improvement in this area of work. But thank you very much for your availability, your quality inputs, and your quality time with us. We're looking forward to the next meeting with the Honourable Minister and the Honourable Deputy Minister. Thank you very much.
My absolute request should also have extended an invitation that when the portfolio committee gets signed, to also visit the head office in Pretoria, the department, to go through all the flows, meet people, find out what's going on, and so on. You are more than welcome. At your convenience. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. We're looking forward. Members and the DG and the officials from the department, I don't know how you feel. There's tea over there. I don't know if you need just a 5 minute tea break so that they can come back and, you know, refreshed and proceed in this robust debate that I see in this meeting. Maybe we should take a 5 minute break. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.